Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. This is the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. And it's another roundtable. We're talking about Ofcom and BBC Radio, the value of live events, S-Town, Chris Country, and you'll hear a special version of Fighting Talk's Defend the Indefensible. David Lloyd's here too with this week's Radio Moments. Stu's back with the latest news. But first, let's meet the panel.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Jonathan Arendt, otherwise known as Jonty Arendt. I'm CEO of Jazz FM and I'm chairing this year's Radio Festival.
I'm Ford Ennals. I'm CEO of Digital Radio UK. So I love all things digital, digital devices, digital radio. I also, by the way, love to listen to radio when I run along the beach, which I'm looking forward to at summer.
My name's Simon Cross. I'm a radio producer and the owner of Shooting Shark, an independent production company, and I make radio shows, lots of obscure cultish ones and some famous ones as well, like 2 for 5 Live, including 606 and Fighting Talk.
So this is the first time you've sat on a panel and you haven't been producing it with lots of bells and buzzers.
Exactly. It feels strange to me to be on this side of the microphone, yeah.
Well, we'll try and get a little bit of the Fighting Talk vibe going on. Let's talk about this Ofcom consultation document, which has now been published. What do we make of Ofcom wanting to be, in fact, being charged with looking after the BBC and telling us in advance the sort of changes that they want to make, Jonty?
I think it's a brilliant thing, and I think their consultation paper is pretty good, and I think it stuck very closely to a lot of the current rules that surround most of the networks. And I think where they're pushing around the edges, they're pushing exactly the right places.
So it's been characterised as the commercial radio lobby saying to the BBC, can you not be quite so successful, not win such big audiences? Is that how you see it?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think there's an awful lot of public money being spent, and I think it needs to be spent with a little bit of oversight. And I think this is bringing the right level of oversight.
And is it good news for a small station like Jazz FM?
I don't know. I think it's good news for big networks to be told they need to focus increasingly on things that are important to this country.
Simon, one of the things that's come out of it is the proposal that 5 Live should cover more sports. In fact, they're saying 20 sports.
Yes.
I was trying on the train to think of 20 sports. It's quite hard, isn't it? We're going to have conkers.
We may have been coming in different directions, but we both spent our train journey doing the same things. I wrote down 16 off the top of my head. So I don't think they're going to have difficulty reaching 20. That was 16 that they cover really well and really properly with live commentary and debate programmes, etc. So they needed to throw in a few more. I reckon they probably do 20 already. I think in an Olympic year, obviously, they bash through the 20 without a problem. And it depends, I suppose, if you count women's football and football as two different sports. That's another couple there. So I think they're, for 3 years, I think they've pretty successfully done around 20 anyway, because the Trust insisted on that level and variety of it. The problem they've got, though, is that 5 Live itself has to be, they've got a quota of having to be 75% news. So they've only got 25% of their airtime that is available for sport. And if they have to cover 20 sports more thoroughly than they're doing now, and if Ofcom are serious about this at all, they have to allow 5 Live to broaden Sports Extra, which is still, after all this time, is still the most ridiculous radio station in the world, because they're the only radio station in the world that say, please turn us off now and go and listen to somebody else because we're not back till Thursday. You know, they can only do live commentary on Sports Extra. That's the rule they have to play by. And I know they've tried to change this, and I hope that 5 Live and Ofcom revisit this and take it seriously, because if they want to cover 20 sports thoroughly, they need to be allowed to put a lot of that on Sports Extra and do more commentaries on Sports Extra and magazine programmes on Sports Extra, because hockey needs hockey. At prime time, the GB hockey women won a gold medal, and Sam Quek, because she's pretty, has managed to parlay that into a reality career. But pretty much most of them have gone back to their clubs and back to obscurity. I'm sure they would love an hour-long weekly update on what's going on in their lives on Sports Extra, but they're not allowed to do that.
Well, to be fair, the BBC's got the money to do that, do you think?
The funding's a different thing. They're going to have to fund this. They can't. It's also very good for indies as well, so vested interest for me, of course, as a sports programme-making indie. to have more hours open up to us.
Let's but they've
got to have some funding for it as well.
Yeah, I mean, just to reinforce your point, I mean, to be fair to the BBC, this is exactly what they would like to do. They have put proposals forward to Ofcom and others to change the licence for Five Live Sport Extra, which actually does, you know, get regularly over a million listeners, you know, every week. So it is a very successful service. But as you say, it's not a full 24/7 service, which it could be and probably should be. I think maybe the timing was wrong. I mean, last year, as we know, we saw the new TalkSport service launch, TalkSport 2, which actually has done really well.
Yeah.
So maybe now that that's sort of bedded in on the new Sound Digital DAB network, there'll be an opportunity for the BBC to revisit the licence of Five Live Sport Extra.
One of the things that came out of this for me was the issue of calibration and reporting. It's very tedious to have to look at a programme running order and say, ooh, have I got 30% English acts? Have I got 40% new bands? Have I got this, that and the other? Isn't that going to slightly push against the sort of creative way of making a programme running order?
But they do it. They do it already. I mean, the percentages for new music, are, you know, are the same in some, and five percentage point more. So I think that's what I meant when pushing it forward a bit. So it's not that different to where they currently are, and they already have to look at calibrating and look at whether they're doing that. So I don't think that's a massive change.
I was in Canada as a DJ in 1988. And there was a guy who had a room, and on the door it said, whatever his name was, Canadian Content Director, because you had to play 50% Canadian bands on our radio station. And he would occasionally come and tap me on the shoulder and say, can you drop Foreigner and put in Rush?
yeah.
And also, if I was
never
on,
a good choice.
If I was on the on the overnight show, which quite often has the English guy and the new guy, I got to do that, the midnight till 5 a.m. slot. It was all Canadian bands. I just had to play. That's why I know a lot about Corey Hart and Max Webster and Kim Mitchell and Loverboy and all these Canadian bands, because I had to play them for 5 hours so that their Canadian content during the day. And now we're going to have a lot of more English content on Radio 1. Is it just Radio 1?
And two. But it's a 5 percentage point shift.
Oh, okay.
So it's not huge. And I think this is fundamentally different to what you're talking about. And, of course, what happens in France, where for years they've had legislation which is about the whole industry, and we're not talking about that. This isn't some sort of mad positioning by the government. This is about people looking specifically at networks and saying what they should be doing and bringing a little bit of rigour into the whole process that already exists.
I also would absolutely welcome the appointment of Ofcom as the first external regulator for BBC. I mean, they will, exactly as you say, Jonathan, bring rigour, consistency and indeed transparency to the process, which we haven't really had before. I like Ofcom. They have a good track record, they have good people, and I think they're going to do a good job. But my observation about the framework that we've seen so far is that I don't think it's particularly radical. I don't think it's going to change the nature of BBC Radio, and frankly I think that's a good thing.
But the percentages for Radio 2, there's no change.
So you can do more news in prime time.
Yeah, they have, sorry, but I was talking about music. So the 40
one hour more, from 16 hours to 17 hours over a week. I don't think it's, once again, that's effectively
not a stretch target. That is,
yeah.
It?
So none of it's very radical then. If they're telling Five Live to do 20 sports and Five Live say, well, yeah, we kind of already do, and they're telling Radio 2 to play this much British music and we sort of almost already do. Is there anything in there that's really sort of that the BBC are thinking? Oh dear, we've really got to pull our socks up.
Well, I suspect not.
I suspect not either. I think they're probably
quite pleased.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think it's a good thing.
Before we leave the BBC, anybody got any thoughts on the handling of the demise of Brian Matthew?
Well, pretty interesting. I mean, I saw the news broke, and I was in a meeting with Nick Pitts, who's content director here at Jazz, and. He flicked over from Radio 2 to the news, and of course it wasn't covered on the news site, it was only on Radio 2, which shows that they weren't quite following their own rigorous rules for checking.
And what did we think of, I mean, will there be red faces at the BBC?
A regrettable cock-up, wasn't it, unfortunately, and one which wasn't especially amusing one, really, because it was about an old man and a legend of our industry.
There's a very good piece about Brian by Bob Stanley in The Guardian today, talking about what he, Brian, used to like to talk about, which is the music of the 50s and the 40s. He didn't really enjoy the 60s too much. And I interviewed him once, and he was absolutely fascinating because he completely ignored pirate radio. He reckoned that pirate radio had no effect at all in the 1960s, and that the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and the Who and all those bands were entirely created by Easy Beat and Saturday Club.
And you know, perhaps that's what we shouldn't lose sight of, frankly. I mean, the guy was an absolute legend. I mean, you know, 50 years ago, he's one of the first voices on Radio 2, 27 years of presenting Sound of the 60s. He's 88. He'll be absolutely missed. And I think we should be respectful of what he achieved and what he brought to industry.
This is the monthly roundtable from Radio Today. We've got Simon Cross here and Ford Ennals and John Tierrent. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's just talk about digital radio in the light this week, Ford, that Share Radio has gone under, but Zest is launching in Liverpool. There's always good news and bad news from the small digital stations, I think.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a great shame. I mean, you know, I know Gavin Oldham. He had a brave attempt to create something different, and ultimately, you know, he wasn't able to balance his costs and his revenue out, and I think that was an issue. And it's a shame because I listened to the service. I think, you know,
it was quite a costly operation.
There is
wasn't
great
it?
Content.
I did
there,
an interview with him and had a look round when it started, and it was quite rich.
But it is something that he hadn't been tried and tested. I don't think there was a lot of radio experience behind it, but there were some great ideas. But what I would say, though, is, I mean, in the last, five, 6 years, we've seen national commercial radio stations go from 4 to 34. Last year, we saw 19 stations launch on Sound Digital. When you get any new expansion of choice, radical expansion of choice, there'll be winners and losers. Some stations will succeed, some won't. At the end of the day, Sound Digital has over 4 million listeners, 35 million hours of listening, and is doing really well. And I also believe that there are probably people lining up to take that slot as soon as Share Radio does vacate it. So it's a great shame. I wish Gavin and the whole team well for the future. But at the end of the day, I think digital radio will continue to grow and be successful.
Simon, are you listening to more stations now there are more stations available?
Without a doubt. And also having a car with a digital radio is always a life changer about a year ago. And it's changed everything. Do you think Bloomberg Radio, would that have had an effect on Share Radio?
Well, I listen to Bloomberg, and it is in the same patch, frankly, and is well informed and does a good job. What I would say, though, is, and I still see this gap for a 24/7 news service that isn't there. When anything dramatic happens in this country, whether it be the terrorist attacks we saw recently or the Brexit vote, you want to go to someone who's going to provide you news, and it's very hard to find that because 5 Live is a hybrid. There are some great stations out there. LBC is another one. But at the end of the day, you know, there is a news service lacking, and be interesting
that
to
would
see.
That would be really expensive though, wouldn't it? That's if you're talking about, I mean, a lot of the radio stations I listen to on digital are really good and probably relatively cost effective. A 24/7 news station, and to be fair to LBC and 5 Live and all these, is that if there is a major incident, they would ditch any rugby commentary or any phone-in programme for coverage of that.
Well, it'd be interesting. As we know, the biggest news provider in this country has bought into the radio sector in buying Wireless in terms of News UK. So they have both the resources, they have the journalism, and they certainly have the money to invest in radio. So
and you were just talking about something that appeared on your smartphone
seconds
ago.
I mean, obviously, we see a closer and closer relationship between their newspaper titles, like The Sun in particular, and their stations. So previously, we've seen them promoting Talk Sport. Now we see them promoting Talk Radio. We saw at Christmas, the Scottish Sun launched a Christmas station. So I think we can expect, and I think probably would welcome to see an increasing involvement, engagement with the News UK group and radio.
John, is it a barrier to you that you're only on digital?
Not at all. I mean, I'm going to go back to Share Radio for a moment, because I mean, Share Radio, part of the amazing world we live in now is that new things can come and go, and we're part of an enterprise culture, and if people want to do this, they can. And Gavin came in, he knew, I mean, I agree with Ford, maybe there wasn't quite enough expertise sitting behind how it could have been set up, but he knew that it was a big ask what he was doing, and he was prepared to do it and spend a lot of his own money. And it's a real shame that it's going. and you asked about Zest, well, you know, great, there's somebody else coming in, and there'll be somebody who'll take over that slot on Sound Digital, and there'll be more and more, and what the Sun doing things like that. I mean, absolutely brilliant. I mean, as I was working for Reuters doing a 24/7 news service for with LBC, one, I know how much it costs. Two, I know how difficult it was. And three, I know how committed they were to doing it until they lost the commitment to do it. And that's the same thing that could happen with any very rich and very big organisation. Yeah. And they sure had enough money to carry on losing money if they wanted to. It's a big ask to do a 24/7 news service. And I think maybe we're going to get people trying different things, and maybe we'll get different pop-ups happening. And I think that's a great thing.
Do you think there will be, as digital radio expands forward, do you think there will be more local and more micro services?
Well, I think we're going to see both, actually. We're going to see more national stations subject to capacity. I mean, at the moment, it's just capacity constrained, but we now have, I mean, in across the country, we have over 40 national stations, which is a good thing. But what we are seeing now, you're probably aware of this small-scale DAB, these mini-muxes in 10 markets. There's 140 stations on air across those 10 markets. A bill has just gone through the House of Parliament. We'll turn that into law. And from next year, we could see that in 150 markets. That could be thousands of new radio stations. And the reasons why it's been so popular and so successful is that it's effectively reduced the barrier to entry. So people who could be paying thousands of costs of transmission, whether on DAB or analogue or FM, are now paying hundreds of pounds of transmission costs. So it literally allows someone with their computer in their bedroom to be on radio. So I do think we are going to see, as you say, these micro, ultra-local services. And I think, you know, we should welcome that. It's great news.
Let's talk, if we may, about live events on the radio. You do your jazz festival, A Love Supreme. Simon, you've recently been doing Fighting Talk live, and you've done it over the years. There seems to me to be more of a sense of radio wanting to engage with the public after some years of, for the most part, us all thinking, well, we'll just stay in the studio. What does a show like Fighting Talk get out of being in front of a live crowd?
Oh, there's it's a really rewarding experience for one's ego to see loads of people coming out to watch a damn radio show being done. But, of course, there's much more to it than that. At Liverpool, where we just did Fight and Talk, we're going to do 7 shows in 7 months live. And Liverpool was the second one. We did Glasgow a few weeks before, but that was tied in with the Six Music Festival. We were guests of theirs. There seems to be a real hunger for tickets. They're free. In the past, we've done larger events, including the Echo Arena, where we've had 5,000 people turning up, and Stoke City Football Ground, where we actually did it in one of the stands on the field, where there are 4,000 people. We charged a small cost-covering fee for that. These were free tickets, and on one on-air mention, we pretty much filled the 950.
That would have been that one hell
that
of a stadium.
That would have been a big show. Rio de Janeiro, here we come. The 950 seats straight away went on one on-air mention for free tickets. So there's obviously our fans are sort of like to come and see the show done, and they seem to enjoy the experience of watching it done. And we put on a few extra bits around it, like some question and answers beforehand.
And people love seeing live broadcast. The whole being present, and that's why people love watching going to watch TV shows being made and watching radio shows being made. And we took our Jazz Shaper show out live for the first time end of last year, and we did it in a cinema in London, and it was a fantastic experience. And I remembered why people like live so much. I mean, the difficulty is about what it sounds like on air.
Well, I was going to say, the old orthodoxy used to be live is great for the people there, but for the listeners it's not working.
Well,
But I think that's changing a bit.
A bit, but I think lots of the reasons to do live are to do with having lots of different touch points for the radio station, lots of different places people can get involved with you, doing stuff for online, doing stuff for mobile. It's about making sure that you're involved in lots of different ways. So I think that's added to it. But I still think the same issues happen about what your big audience are hearing on air. And so when we go to Love Supreme, we don't play live concerts. We don't have one artist performing for an hour or so, because that isn't why people listen to Jazz FM. They want to hear a different form of curation. So we do lots of interviews, we get the artists, we bring the live experience to them, but it's not about us doing live broadcast in that way. So I think that still exists.
As a producer, it's finding that sweet spot, remembering the hundreds of thousands of people who are listening, and on Saturday watching as well, because we were also live on the red button on BBC television, which again added another dimension of people sort of peering in on a radio show. Making sure that people there are still having a good time. We can't ignore them completely, because if there's no vibe or heat from the audience, everything's going to fall slightly flat. But you can see for yourself. This sounds like a plug, but I think it's interesting to see a radio show being done. And it's on, as of, like, we're recording this on a Tuesday lunchtime, and as of right now, in fact, noon on Tuesday, it's on the five. The whole show's on the Five
Live
website.
There's a great clip on Twitter of the guy in the audience who shouts, "Can we go now?"
That was a great moment. It was a great moment where, just briefly, Simon Rimmer was one of the guests, and we have a thing at the end of the Fighting Talk called Any Other Business, where anyone can sound off about anything they like for as long as they like. Within reason, that's bothered them that week. So you'd get a lot of traffic wardens and stuff like that. And Simon Rimmer was very passionate about a certain type of dustbin, a galvanised dustbin. And he went on and on. He brought pictures to a radio show. And somebody in their audience put their hand up. And Rachel Riley, who was also on the show, said, "Oh, there's somebody with their hand up in the audience. What do they want?" And he goes, "Can we go now?" And it went from the audience. And it created a really nice moment. That's on YouTube and Twitter. There's lots of little clips of it, because it's a very clippable show. But the whole show is available to watch on the Five Live website.
What I would say about public events and live events on the radio is, increasingly, you know, we as a radio sector are competing with music streaming services, and this is part of the added value that I think live radio does bring. It also connects us with our audiences so powerfully, and as exactly as Jonathan said, you know, in the digital age, it gives you so much content that you can share across different platforms. And I did want to have a shout out for a special event that I went to this year, which was great, was really well covered on radio, which was the Country to Country Festival. I'm a big country fan. It was great to see the Radio 2 Country pop up back again, but also celebrating Chris Country, the commercial radio country station as well. They were part of it. I thought that was a really nice collaboration. I thought they really brilliantly handled that event.
Can I get behind Ford with that endorsement? Completely agree. It was, first of all, it's an amazing 3-day event anyway for a member of the public, and I go as a punter every year. But then to go home and listen to the whole 8 hours again on the pop-up radio station and illegally download it and put it on your iPod.
Shame on you.
It's amazing. It was so great that Chris Country was embraced, because I'm a big Chris Country fan.
Chris Stevens is a great broadcaster. He does a wonderful job for country in the UK.
Next thing I want to touch on is conferences. Jonty, you mentioned earlier you're the chairman of the Radio Festival, which of course is going to be shortly. It's moved from its autumn position. Ford and Simon and I were at Radio Days Europe. Briefly, what did we make of it? You spoke there, didn't you, Ford?
I was speaking about digital radio in cars, actually, and about the future. I mean, what was interesting about it, I haven't been for a couple of years, so I've had a couple of years off. So there we were all in Amsterdam, not sure what to expect. I sense a different atmosphere, a different tone, actually.
More positive.
Much more upbeat, confident about radio's place in the future. 2 or 3 years ago, people thought, you know, we were Spotify, were going to eat us for lunch. And Spotify haven't gone away, but I think people are seeing how resilient and robust radio is. So I saw a lot of confidence, a lot of interest in technology, not surprisingly. So Spotify spoke, Google spoke, Sonos spoke. Those sessions were packed out. And I think maybe that's one of the things that, you know, people from the UK and across Europe all share. The strange thing for me was, how did the UK fit in all of that? There were very few UK delegates, apart from speakers, but there are a lot of UK sessions. So I do wonder about the balance of that conference and who it's for. But I would certainly say I'd bring a lot of confidence and optimism. I'm sure that will be reflected in Jonathan's radio festival as well.
When you say who it's for, what do you mean by that?
Well, in as much as I said there was a lot of UK sessions, a lot of UK presenters, but very few UK attendees. So the audience tend to be radio across Europe. And so, you know, I think it this needs to be an exchange. So surely there are probably great program ideas out of Berlin and Amsterdam and elsewhere that UK radio can learn. But it wasn't an exchange in that way.
No, I think the great thing is that we provide an awful lot of good speakers to lots of conferences all over the world. I think that's the main point. I mean, I was in Paris recently for their conference, and it was the same thing. There was a huge amount of speakers from the UK and very few people in the audience. But, you know, we were great.
It's almost, though, you say that.
Even though you think so yourself. Yeah. I was there too. Yeah.
I think there's a slight sense in which Brexit's already happened in the radio, and that we the Brits, are a bit patronising, you know, when we go over to these international conferences, because we're sort of saying, hey, guys, we don't want to learn anything. We can't learn anything from you.
Oh, do you think that?
But you can learn a lot from us.
Do you think that's what it is?
I think there's a feeling of that.
I'm not sure. I think there's a truth underneath that, because I found there wasn't many people there from Britain in the audience, as you say. You're completely right about the way that was split up. But UK is certainly held in great regard by everybody else. So I think there's an underlying truth in what you say, whether you look at it from your point of view as being sort of a patronising, or whether it's the reality, is that I think they want the Brits there. That might change.
Yes, it certainly might. Shall we, before we move on to what we've been listening to, is there, as they say on Fighting Talk, any other business before we go to our clips?
I just wanted to raise Google Home. Google Home launched last Thursday. It's a direct competitor to the Amazon Echo. It's £20 cheaper. It's smaller. It looks a bit like an air freshener. It isn't quite as well powered as Alexa. But the good news is it's much better at finding radio stations. One of the great frustrations about the Echo is that, particularly on commercial radio stations, and this is an issue I know the Bauer Group has, it finds it hard to find those stations, or sometimes it will bring you the Spanish version of Magic or the French version of Kiss. So, Google Home is much more accurate and is good news. I mean, I think both of them would be enhanced with using the radio player skill, which you can do on Alexa, but not on the Google Home. But I think we shouldn't be scared or frightened by this new technology. Basically, these are great digital radios, and I'm sure and confident that the majority of audio listening is radio. So it's part of our world.
I totally agree. I mean, I've had one of these things in my home from the moment you could buy one, and I love it, and it's increased radio listening in the home, and it's absolutely brilliant. And I think the point about other conferences and the fear that used to be about the future, people are not afeared anymore, because they realise they're just different ways to exist. And this is more radio. It's not more music. It's more radio. Love it.
Absolutely right.
So what have you been listening to on your Google Home or your Alexa Echo or whatever it is, Jonty?
Well, as you know, I'm an insomniac. Well, as you can see, I'm an insomniac.
I was going to say, I don't know what you're doing.
Well, you can see. That's why I always have red eyes. And I listen to the World Service. And I think the World Service is one of the most brilliant services in this country. And I think has gone through a massive improvement. And talking about where I get great news, that's where I get great news. And I get great news from the whole world. And so I've been listening to more and more World Service. I don't listen during the day at all, because I listen to Jazz FM all day.
That's a good station as well.
It's a very good station. And in fact, we're talking about Five Live. You know, the Sarah Ward's programme on Sunday evenings, which the Observer just called arguably the best radio presenter in the country, is a brilliant bit of radio, and is a place for people to come in and understand what jazz is all about and Jazz FM's all about. But also, Sarah has been broadcasting brilliantly for years, and that programme is a perfect piece of radio.
Here's a clip.
That piece is called Bird Vision, and I guess you can imagine from that title who's being paid homage to there, the great Charlie Parker, and that's the Finnish pianist Aki Rissanen with his trio there. Aki Rissanen, big news back home in Finland and through all of that Scandinavian part of Europe as well, and recently the winner of a very big prize indeed. His album, which I've had for a little while, called Amarandon, is terrific, and that's one of the tracks from it. Here's Tim Garland, celebrated here, of course, one of our great homegrown players, with one of the pieces from his album One. And here he is with The Eternal Greeting, with Jason Ribello on piano, Asif Circus playing the drums, and Law on guitar. ¶¶
Modest there on Jazz FM. Ford Annals, what have you been listening to?
Well, rather belatedly, I've caught up with the new podcast series from This American Life, Shit Town. I don't know if we can say that on
you
on
can say anything you like.
Marked it as S Town, but it's really worth a listen. It's very unsettling. It's sort of the playoff of rural blue collar American life. Definitely worth listening. Shout out to Sean Keaveney, 10 years on breakfast shows, Six Music, and still fresh. I love what he does. I've already mentioned I'm a big fan of Chris Stevens on Chris Country. PY on Jazz FM. Jazz FM, I only switch Jazz FM on home if I've got company around and I want to impress them. Because they'll think I'm more sophisticated and cooler than I really am. So when Jazz FM goes into that soul zone, it's got me. And when they play Marvin Gaye, you know, I'm all over that. I also listen to Magic Soul itself. Roberto, I know anyone's been listening to Roberto. Heart 80s, the new global national digital radio station. Been loving that. And Encore Radio from UKRD. I like a bit of musicals as well. So yeah, lots of great.
That's
radio
a lot of
week.
Clips.
Yeah. You don't have to listen to it all.
I can't put all of those in. So given that you can only choose one, this is like the end of Desert Island Discs. Which shall it be?
I'd like you to play something from Chris Stevens because
good plan
because he's a mate.
Here he is.
Chris
Country.
Brandi Clark, welcome back to the UK.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so great to be back here.
So what, second trip this year?
Second trip ever.
Right.
Yeah, I was over in, I guess it was 2015 I was here for C2C. Yeah, it would have been 2015. And so this is my first time back on my own, you know, and it's just such a great place to be.
And you've got a new album out as well. Now, Big Day in a Small Town. I was looking up, you come from a fairly small town, so while you were growing up, were you subconsciously taking in storylines for future songs, do you think?
I think I was, you know. I grew up in Morton, Washington. You know, population, I always say 900 to 1100, somewhere in there. And it's such a great place to be and to grow up. And it was all I knew. You know, I didn't know big city life until I moved to Nashville. And I knew a lot of characters in Morton. And I do think that my upbringing and the people I knew really affected me as a writer.
Because there's a lot of characters in your songs.
Yeah, oh, I love a character. I think that all great stories, there's some great characters.
My wife won't wear orange, by the way, because of your song Stripes, talking of stories. So there's a story in everything you do, it seems.
There's Chris Stevens on Chris Country. Simon Cross.
When we do Fighting Talk, we brief the guests before and to make sure that none of their answers clash. Really wish you'd done that today because Shit Town.
It's S-Town, isn't it?
And Chris Country. I've got it here on my list. Proof.
Honest,
me and Ford should go out. We've never met, right? But we kind of like almost exactly the same thing. I'm still catching up with some of the country-to-country sessions on BBC Radio 2's Country and listening to Chris Country and Kerrang are number one and number two on my digital.
You lost me when you got to Kerrang, I'm sorry.
Oh,
with you.
You should definitely embrace that. Maybe we won't go out then, Ford. But Chris Country and Kerrang are my two music stations of choice right now. And if they're on adverts, I'll go to Planet Rock because you never can have enough Rush in your life. listening to loads of podcasts. It's the start of the baseball season. I'm a big baseball fan and I play fantasy baseball, so I need intel on base percentages of Kansas City first base. So I need to consume a lot of baseball.
Another reason why you'll never go out with Ford. You've lost him.
Look. As well as trying to keep up with what Howard Stern's doing, which is a lot more manageable now that he only does 3 days a week. You went for Chris Country, didn't you, Ford?
I did go for Chris Country.
So can my clip be from S-Town, which I've only... no spoilers, because I'm only on episode one, and it's really fascinating, and it's got me, and I can't wait to find out if the guy's for real, or is he just a nutcase... What's gonna happen?
Something's happened. Something has absolutely happened in this town. There's just too much little crap for something not to have happened. and I'm about had enough of shit town and the things that goes on.
From Serial and This American Life, I'm Brian Reed. This is Shit Town. John B. McLemore lives in Shit Town, Alabama. That's the subject line that catches my eye one day in late 2012 while I'm reading through emails that have come into our radio show, This American Life. The email's from John B. McLemore. Shit Town is capitalized.
The story that I was told is that they were at some party, and the Nichols boy, Cabram and his buddy, had ganged up on him and was calling him a bitch boy and a bitch boy or a bitch boy and all that. And the boy eventually smacked one of them, and they jumped on him. Well, the boy that they jumped on, that's Dylan Nichols, pulled out a little knife and cut the throat of Cabram's friend. Well, Cabram pulled his belt off and wrapped it around the neck of the friend's whose throat got cut and got the Nichols boy down the ground somehow and kicked him in the head repeatedly and kept kicking him in the head until he was basically unconscious. Well, of course, you know the rest of the story from the first part that I told you. You know, the boy, paraplegic, died in a few days. Jake is nosy. He asked him, how'd he just get by so easy? And, you know, the Burt boy, Cabram Burt, had told him they just claimed it was self-defense, and the other guy kept his damn mouth shut. Of course, Cabram's family has got plenty of money, so naturally it wasn't murder. Now,
so just to clarify, so you're hearing this from a guy named Jake Goodson?
Mm-hmm.
He ran into Cabram, and and Cabram told him that we told the other guy to keep his mouth shut and we claim self-defense? Mm-hmm. That's what he told him?
There you go. Now, at some time, I was up there at that hardware store, and Kendall, that's Cabram's father, is back there on the phone yakking that big mouth. He's one of these big mouth Rush Limbaugh types. Loves Glenn Beck. Running that mouth. And what I heard come out of that office was, he's my son, I love him, but he's guilty as hell, and I know it. And he finally realized that someone was standing out there waiting to be waited on and pulled up and slammed the hell out of that damn door and then got a lot quieter with that conversation.
That's S-Town. Very good podcast from the This American Life stable. I want to pick this week something which hasn't been broadcast, but which I heard at the Charles Parker Day on Friday, which is a celebration of the work of the great producer of the 1950s and 60s, Charles Parker. His daughter Sarah was there. John Leonard and John Tams were there recreating a radio ballad live, which was absolutely brilliant, with the Pro Tools session running above their heads while they were singing. It was just an extraordinary thing to watch. But also on the day, they presented the Charles Parker Award to the best bit of student radio. And it was won by Tabitha Constantine for this extraordinary story of two people who work on the railway in Merseyside. A conductor and, first of all, a driver.
Nothing untoward, just a normal day. For November, it wasn't bad. Did my usual, got up to 30 mile an hour, shut off. And then the bridge, just after Eccleston Park, I just sort of looked, and then this fella just come from behind the back of the stanchion, dropped to his knees, put his hands just before the rail, and put his head on the track. I was shouting at him, what are you doing? I said, I'm thinking, I'm swearing at him, you fucking dickhead, what are you doing? When you're told in the mess room and that, everybody says to you, oh, yeah, you hear this bang, and I tell you, don't look. Don't look at him, but I couldn't stop looking at him because I'm sounding my horn at him and he was just dead, like matter of fact. And I'm thinking, wow, that's weird. What is he doing? Didn't seem real. Sounded my horn, slammed the brakes on. Next minute, gone past and didn't feel anything. And you're thinking, have I hit him?
The first indication that there was anything wrong was the driver had put the emergency brake on, so we were coming to a very, very sharp stop. Then the stones on the track were starting to be lifted and hit the bottom of the train, so you could hear them pinging off the bottom of the train. The first thing I did was open the window and look outside, and all I saw was plumes of dust coming from under the train, which I first thought was smoke. which was a little worrying. So I stuck my head out a little further, hoping to not see flames. And that was when I saw a hand sticking out from under the train.
Very spooky. Extraordinary bit of radio. Well done, Tabitha Constantine, from the University of Salford. And for the avoidance of doubt, no, she's not one of my students. But excellent, excellent work. In an effort to lighten the mood, I'm going to spring a surprise on you, Simon.
Oh, dear.
Because I haven't asked you to do this, and you can say no if you want. But the highlight of your own show, Fighting Talk, is Defend the Indefensible.
Oh, no.
Where you ask one of the panellists to speak for, I think it's 30 seconds.
20 seconds.
20 seconds on a subject, and they have to defend this entirely indefensible comment. So are you ready for this?
Oh, this is unfair, but go on.
Go on.
You can
right.
cut it out if it's...
OK, here we go. The phrase you have to defend is, Colin Murray is the least talented presenter on UK radio.
And you call this session Defend the Indefensible? That's easy to stand by. The Irish gobshite has stolen a living for 20 years. I don't know how he's done it. Maybe there was some sort of quota back in the day that Radio 1 had to have an Irishman on air. There has to be a reason for it, because God knows how he survived otherwise. This is actually a much easier one than some of the ones we give to our panel, because Colin Murray is a talentless, no hope. Talk Sport bought into it for some reason, and now he's back on 5 Live. What a joke. That's my 20 seconds.
If they don't use that clip on Fighting Talk, I'll want to know the reason
why.
That
was easy, Trevor.
Simon Cross, well done. Thank you. You're a trooper. Ford Ellis, thank you as well.
You're
and
welcome.
John T, thank you for being on the panel and also for hosting this monthly roundtable edition of the Radio Today programme. Let's have some news now. Here's Stuart Clarkson.
Thank you, Trevor. Here are the big stories from radiotoday.co.uk over the last 7 days. And tributes have been paid this week to the long-serving BBC radio presenter Brian Matthew, who's died aged 88. He joined the BBC in 1954 and worked on The Light Programme, then Radio 1 and Radio 2, and hosted programmes including Saturday Club, My Top 12, Round Midnight and Sounds of the 60s, which he presented for the last 27 years. Magic Breakfast is getting a celebrity feel from later in the year as Ronan Keating and Harriet Scott take over the show from Nick Snaith. Nick's moving to mid-mornings, replacing Gary Vincent, who leaves the station. The former Boyzone singer Ronan Keating's been doing weekend shows for Magic for the last 7 years, while Harriet now does weekend breakfast there after joining from Heart. Dave Berry, George Shelley and Lila Parsons have done their last Capital London Breakfast show. Dave has departed Global after 10 years to join Absolute Radio. It's not been confirmed as yet who's taking over the Capital Breakfast show, though network evening presenter Roman Kemp looks a likely contender. The national DAB station Share Radio is to close on May the 5th. It broadcasts on the SDL D2 multiplex after originally just launching in London. The founder Gavin Oldham told Radio Today the decision had followed difficulties in building sufficient revenue and attracting external investment. And TechCon is back. A date's been set for Monday the 27th of November this year. Engineers and technical folk from the radio and audio industries will descend on IET London in Savoy Place for the event, which returned under a new guise last year. And those are this week's big stories. Don't forget our new podcast out every Friday morning called Radio Today News, where we take a more in-depth look at this week's big stories in radio, including audio clips. And of course, there's news updated daily at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu. And thanks for looking after the pod while I was away. Two really good episodes, I thought. After this, it's David Lloyd time.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
He once ruled the nation's favourite station, and this week he's 80. Happy birthday, Johnny Beerling.
Liz Forgan was brought in around the time of John Burt, and she took over as managing director, and she was the total opposite. Controller's job to control, not my business. For instance, over the problem with Dave Lee Travis, who would have been much better suited to Radio 2, she wouldn't interfere, she wouldn't dictate to Francis Lyne, the then controller, that she should take Dave Lee Travis. No, if she doesn't want Dave, then he'll have to go or whatever. Well, we know what the result of that was. Dave more or less fired himself.
Radio 1. Good morning.
Happy 80th birthday. Johnny Bill in control of Radio 1 for 9 colourful years. 41 years ago this week, commercial radio came to Wolverhampton and the Black Country.
This is Beacon Radio 303, an independent local radio station serving the West Midlands. The company is owned and operated by Beacon Broadcasting Limited, PO Box 303, Wolverhampton WV6 ODQ.
We've come up with a thing called News As It Happens. We will mix that with a news on the hour, which we will take from independent radio news. That'll be national and international news. And then in the hour, depending on what happens in the hour, we will come into the programming and integrate into the programming news bulletins as there is news that merits being aired. And that's mainly local, but it can be national if it's a national story of interest to the people in the area.
Beacon management rationalising the fact post hoc that they really didn't want long news bulletins on the hour. Beacon, launched this week in 76, is now free radio. And that same week, the then regulator, the IBA, announced they'd ended phase one of commercial radio. 19 stations were on the air. It must be a great radio format if it lasts 45 years, and Radio 4's I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue has. It was first broadcast on the 11th of April 1972 with a pilot edition the previous November. The panel consisted of the show's deviser, Graham Garden, alongside Bill Oddie, Joe Kendall and Tim Brooke Taylor.
In the art world, Soho has been home to artists Constable and Canaletto. Constable lived on Frith Street in the early 19th century, and it was from there that he travelled the countryside with his easel, making beautiful copies of chocolate boxes.
Host Humphrey Littleton, who died 8 years ago. Happy 45th anniversary to I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. It's 4 years now since TFM started carrying Metro's programmes.
That's the latest. I'm Chris Conway.
Three, two, one.
The transmitter has been seized. Starting Monday at 6 a.m, a new sound.
On TFM.
TFM, relaying Metro's programmes on its frequencies as from this week in 2014. And one suspects there'll be a whole lot more of that later this year if the plans from DCMS come to fruition. This week in 1973, Kaleidoscope began on Radio 4. It was an arts and science programme at first, later just arts. The programme lasted an interminable 15 years.
His whole body is covered in tattoos, but what makes him special is that if you look closely at those tattoos, they begin to move, acting out the future. He is the illustrated man and his creator, Ray Bradbury.
A Kaleidoscope theme tune there, made by the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, which was perhaps best known, of course, for the Doctor Who TV theme tune. The workshop began its project this week in 1958, providing many jingles across the BBC, including Radio Blackburn, Radio Blackburn, Radio Blackburn. Also jingles for Radio Nottingham. And for network programmes such as PM. The original radiophonic workshop was based in the BBC's Maida Vale studios in Delaware Road, London.
The early years of the workshop, the tape music is all found sounds, you say bottle noises and clanging rulers. Then there came the synthesizer era, where sort of tape music, because it was so labour intensive, and it would take weeks to, you know, make a couple of minutes of music, that sort of disappeared, and so everything went very synthesizer for a while. And then, of course, samplers came in, and so the found sound started to be used again.
We were in the vanguard, you might say, at the very beginning of the 70s, of people who were using experimental synthesizers. At first, they weren't as slick and didn't perform as well as some of the later synthesizers. On the other hand, it was a place where you could explore sounds in a whole new, different sort of way.
Mark Ayres and Roger Lim on the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. 4 years ago this week, both the commercial and BBC charts chose not to air the song at number two.
Which means that we've got a brand new entry at number two. To explain more, here's Newsbeat's music reporter, Sinead Garvan.
This
is Newsbeat.
Tributes poured in across the world for Margaret Thatcher when she died on Monday, but there were also people throwing street parties around the UK. An online campaign began in 2007 to try to get this song, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, to number one in the charts the week Lady Thatcher died.
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, Witch is Dead.
The Vodafone Big Top 40.
All right, the song at number nine is a new entry for Judy Garland. To explain more, here's Dominic Byrne from the Big Top 40 news team.
Well, this has all happened following the death of Margaret Thatcher earlier this week, who was Prime Minister from 1979 to 1990. Now, throughout the week, there have been Facebook groups supporting a campaign to download this song. Now, because the Big Top 40 is compiled from and directly affected by downloads at iTunes, as a result, the track features in today's chart.
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Must get myself a job in the Big Top 40 news team. So, with Hereward splitting its AM at FM 25 years ago...
So, you can't call it the world's greatest music station. You cannot make such a claim.
CFM making its debut in Carlisle 24 years ago... The death of BBC Cornwall's Ted Gundry last year.
Mr. Percy Brave takes his scythe to complete his corn harvest.
And Capital buying the Century Station 17 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! That's it for this week, with thanks to David Lloyd, Stu Clarkson and our esteemed panellists. It's been a TDC production. We're part of the Folder & Co group. And there'll be more next week. Cheers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.